to you all around the world. Welcome to another edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, February 11th, 2024. I'm Atefe Erfani hosting this program today. Welcome to the program, and on behalf of all IRIB English Radio staff, I extend my sincere congratulations on the occasion of the 45th anniversary of the Islamic Revolution in Iran. This historic revolution, under the wise leadership of Imam Khomeini, opened a new chapter in Iran's history and realized the long-held aspirations of the Iranian nation for freedom and self-determination. Over the past 45 years, the Islamic Republic of Iran has achieved significant progress in various fields, despite facing countless sanctions and pressures. The revolution has guaranteed Iran's independence and paved the way for scientific advancement. Congratulations to all freedom-seeking and justice-seeking people around the world. Here we are with you with Listeners, a special program broadcast on Sunday. And this is a program where your views are presented through your emails, letters, and messages. So please contact us and tell us what you think about our programs. And if you have any message for our listeners around the world, you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. And here we've received reception reports from around the world from Ivan Zeleny from Russia, one of our old and regular listeners, from Santu Bahakat from India, and from David Mabi from Finland. So, Ivan, Santu, and David, we want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. And we've received emails and letters from around the world from Nasiru Hassan from Nigeria, one of our old and regular listeners. Hey Mercia from the Philippines has sent us a piece of email. And here we've received an email from Anand Mohan Bain from India, one of our old and regular listeners. Stay with us, please. I will be back with you. Welcome back. This is another edition of Listeners Special. And as you may know, today marks the 45th anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution of Iran. The 1979 Islamic Revolution of Iran, spearheaded by Imam Khomeini, centered on the principles of justice and a struggle against hegemonic powers of the world, and laid the foundation for other movements across the world from South Africa to South Asia. Imam Khomeini had the distinction of being the first world leader to break all ties with the then South African apartheid regime, as well as the Zionist regime in Tel Aviv, bravely declaring them as illegitimate entities in what was widely regarded as a daring move by the Islamic Republic. Over the years, the Islamic Republic of Iran remained steadfastly devoted to one of the key founding principles of Imam Khomeini's movement against global arrogance and international Zionism, that vowed an all-out unified effort to liberate Al-Quds and the entire occupied Palestine from the genocidal occupation and its Western backers. So let's see what our listeners say. Nasiru Hassan from Nigeria has sent us a piece of email. Let's see what Nasiru Hassan says. Today, I am writing this message to congratulate all Muslims and the entire oppressed people around the world on the 45th anniversary of the Islamic Revolution in Iran. The Islamic Republic of Iran became the voice and protector of all oppressed people, irrespective of their religion, skin, color, or country. Wherever injustice and oppression are, the Islamic Republic of Iran opposes. As a Nigerian, I have no word to use to show my happiness on this important anniversary. The Islamic Revolution in Iran was the bridge that Allah the Almighty used for bringing the light of guidance to my country, Nigeria. We consider any harm on Iran as a harm to us, and any positive thing to Iran also a progress to us, despite the difference of geographic location between Iran in the West Asia region and Nigeria in West Africa. I pray to Allah to give me opportunity to come and visit the Islamic Republic of Iran and see the hardworking staff of IRIB English Radio. First of all, a warm salam and greeting to you, Nasiru Hassan from Nigeria, from Tehran, the capital of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Many thanks for your consideration, your thoughtfulness, and your attention. What you described about the anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution and also the Islamic Republic's role in protecting all oppressed people around the world actually was correct. We hope to see you in Iran soon, as you hope that to come and visit the Islamic Republic of Iran and see, as you described, the hardworking staff of IRIB English Radio. Thank you for your compliment, actually. We wish you all the best, and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. My colleagues will soon send you an electronic QSL or QSL, EQSL, actually, as confirmation to this email. God bless you. Please write to us soon. Welcome back. This is another edition of Listeners Special. And over the past 45 years, the Islamic Republic of Iran has achieved significant progresses in various fields despite facing countless sanctions and pressures by Western regimes. According to data released by Scopus, Iran published 78,225 scientific articles in this database in 2022. Accordingly, Iran is ranked 15th in the world in terms of publication of scientific works for the fourth consecutive year. Scopus data in 2022 shows that Iran ranks first among countries in the region in terms of the number of scientific publications. A review of Scopus data from 2014 to 2022 shows that Iran has always been the first among the countries in the region in terms of the number of publications and has been able to maintain this position. According to the data of the Scopus Index, the Tehran University of Medical Sciences has the largest share in Iran's scientific publications by publishing more than 6,800 works. In total, nearly half of Iran's scientific publications in 2022 have been published by 10 universities in the country. Meanwhile, the latest data from the Web of Science in 2022 shows that Iran ranks second among countries in the region. So, and this happens after the victory of the Islamic Revolution. And Hey Mercia from the Philippines has sent us a congratulatory message on the 45th anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution of Iran. Hey Mercia from the Philippines says, "Dear IRIB, I would like to congratulate a happy 45th anniversary of the 1979 Islamic Revolution. I would say that the revolution was a prelude of something big to happen for the next decades. Congratulations to you and all the people of Iran. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you. Hey, Mercia from the Philippines, and thank you very much for writing to us. I'm grateful to you for this congratulation message, and actually congratulations to all freedom-seeking and justice-seeking people around the world. So please accept our electronic QSL or EQSL as confirmation to this email. Hey, Mercia from the Philippines. We wish you all the best, and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. Please tell us your views about our programs in your upcoming emails. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, has said that the West exerted pressures on Iran in order to isolate it, but their efforts in this regard backfired. He described making progress under economic siege and the most severe pressures possible as indicative of the Iranian nation's bright performance. The leader added, the United States said the economic pressures they have put on Iran are unprecedented in history. Despite all their lies, they were true to this. The leader highlighted the progress made in science and technology and Iran's ranking among the top countries of the world in fields such as nano and biotechnology, health, aerospace, nuclear defense, infrastructure, medical centers, and oil refineries. With regards to foreign relations, the West's efforts to isolate Iran have failed, he has said. The share of Iranian articles with international participation has had significant growth of 209% during an 8-year period between 2013 and 2020, becoming the Islamic world's leading country in science, diplomacy, and that is according to Scopus International Citation Database. Today, universities in Iran are flooded with women, confident, happy, and self-assured. The Muslim-majority country's literacy rate for women is among the best in the world. Various studies have credited it to the founder of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Khomeini, who called for the active participation of women not only in politics but also in higher education and the public sector. After the Islamic Revolution in 1979, women were given equal rights to shape their futures. The revolution provided them a chance to build their distinct political identity, and they have been tremendously successful in doing that. Iranian women are today far more politically aware and enlightened than their counterparts in other Muslim societies. As per the 2020 statistics, the overall literacy rate of women in the country was 85.5%, more than that of men at 80.8%. Surprisingly, this female literacy rate happens to be higher than the global average. And that's nice. And it all happened after the victory of the Islamic Revolution. So let's see what Anand Mohan Bain from India, one of our old and regular listeners, says. Anand Mohan says, Namaste to IRIB English radio staff. I am Anand Mohan Bain. I have been listening to your program since 1995. I am writing this message for you to congratulate World Radio Day 2024. If possible, please include my email in your program. A warm salam and greetings to you from Tehran, Anand Mohan Bain from India. As far as I know, Namaste is a way of greeting in Indian. Thank you. Nice. Okay, World Radio Day 2024 happens to be on February 13th, the next 2 days. So congratulations on World Radio Day 2024, Anand Mohan Bain from India. Thank you for this email. We also wish you luck. An EQSL or electronic QSL will soon be sent to you as a confirmation to this email. Write to us soon and tell us your views about our programs. Anand Mohan Bain from India. And here we come to the end of our today's program. Again, on behalf of all IRIB English Radio staff, I extend my sincere congratulations on the occasion of the 45th anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution in Iran. Congratulations to all freedom-seeking and justice-seeking people around the world. Many thanks for being with us. Please keep in touch with us. We wish you all the best. God bless you and goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We will be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send us emails to englishradio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at parstoday.ir/en. Our phone number is 0098-21-2201-3720. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا ذکر الله تطمئن می کند.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
الله يا الله سبحان الله الله يا الله والحمد لله الله ولا إله
The enemies were not able to do anything in the society. The people also will be calm and be busy. They can invest their capital, manage the country, and strengthen it. The government also supports them, and it must be. The main thing is the blessed and almighty Allah is the supporter, and we depend on His blessing. May Allah protect all of you. May Allah's peace, mercy, and blessings be upon you.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, dear audience. Welcome to a new episode of Spring of the Truth from IRIB English Radio. This is Zainab Musavi, and what we do in this program is to talk about some of the beautiful and precious sentences of Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi, who was the founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran. And we try to shed light on some of these speeches in order to take lessons out of them. Well, on the subject of Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi said, "Our great Islamic Revolution is first and foremost a moral spiritual revolution before being a socio-political one." Well, this sentence of Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi concerns the benefits of the Islamic Revolution from several aspects. Imam Rahmatullah alayh is the embodiment of the great movement that the people of Iran began and with which they transformed their history. Imam Rahmatullah alayh was the founder of an intellectual, political, and social school of thought. The people of Iran accepted this school of thought path and roadmap, and they moved forward on it. He was an outstanding personality on these matters and in scholarly areas. But Imam's outstanding personality is not dependent on either of these things. His main characteristic is manifest in this ayah of the Holy Book of Quran. A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Wa'tasimu billahi huwa mawlakum fa ni'mal mawla wa ni'man nasir. And strive in his cause, such as striving that is due to him. Surah Al-Hajj, verse number 78. With his outstanding scholarly capabilities, he entered the arena of jihad in the way of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. He continued this jihad until the end of his life, and he created a great movement, not only in his own country, but also in the entire region and entire world, in fact. The product of this movement was a unique product. Though Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh sparked an Islamic revolution, not a Shi'i revolution or a purely Iranian revolution, his was nonetheless a revolution in one country. Both Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh and his successor, Imam Sayyid Ali al-Husayni al-Khamenei hafazahullah, have been devoted to supporting Islamic movements as well as other justice movements in various countries that embody values compatible with Islam, while at the same time focusing on building viable long-term institutions in Iran. And those institutions, for obvious reasons, have to be compatible with the local religious and ideological orientation of the population. Thank you very much for listening to us. Until another episode, I bid you farewell and may Allah protect you all.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the compassionate, the merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of Insights into the Holy Quran. In this edition of the program, we'll have a look at the verses of chapter Nur, the 24th chapter of the Holy Quran, and different commentary points of these verses. Brothers and sisters, let's listen to the 62nd verse of the chapter.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Innamal mu'minuna alladhina amanu billahi wa rasulihi wa idha kanu ma'ahu ala amrin jami'in لم يذهبوا حتى يستأذنوه إن الذين يستأذنونك أولئك الذين يؤمنون بالله ورسوله فإذا استأذنوك لبعض شأنهم فأذن لمن شئت منهم واستغفر لهم الله إن الله غفور رحيم.
The believers are only those who believe in Allah and His Messenger. And when they are meeting with Him for a matter of common interest, do not depart until they have asked His permission. Indeed, those who ask your permission, O Muhammad, those are the ones who believe in Allah and His Messenger. So when they ask your permission for something of their affairs, then give permission to whom you will among them, and ask forgiveness for them of Allah. Indeed, Allah is forgiving and merciful.
So the verse generally talks about the importance of not acting without apostles' permission. The verse says, إِنَّمَا الْمُؤْمِنُونَ الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا بِاللَّهِ وَرَسُولِهِ وَإِذَا كَانُوا مَعَهُ عَلَىٰ أَمْرٍ جَامِعٍ لَمْ يَذْهَبُوا حَتَّى يَسْتَأْذِنُوهُ. The verse says, only these are the true believers who believe in Allah and His Messenger, and when they are with Him on a matter requiring collective action, they go not away till they have asked leave of Him. إِنَّ الَّذِينَ يَسْتَأْذِنُونَكَ أُولَٰئِكَ الَّذِينَ يُؤْمِنُونَ بِاللَّهِ وَرَسُولِهِ. Verily, those who ask leave of you are those who believe in Allah and His Messenger. فَإِذَا اسْتَأْذَنُوكَ لِبَعْضِ شَأْنِهِمْ فَأْذَنْ لِمَنْ شِئْتَ مِنْهُمْ. So if they ask your leave for some affair of theirs, give them leave. Give leave to whomever you please of them. وَاسْتَغْفِرْ لَهُمُ اللَّهِ إِنَّ اللَّهَ غَفُورٌ رَحِيمٌ. Ask forgiveness of Allah for them. Verily, Allah is forgiving, merciful. Now, prior to this ending part of the verse, we discussed different occasions of revelation for this verse. We said different commentaries that mention different instances of revelation for this matter. Now, we also discussed the importance of real permission, not superficially asked about the leaving of such matter, and about the importance of permissions that the Holy Prophet of Allah is responsible for. Now, the point is that at the end of the verse concerning when giving those people permission, the verse says, وَاسْتَغْفِرْ لَهُمُ اللَّهُ. The question is, were they still wrongdoers that they were asking permission that the Prophet ﷺ has to ask for forgiveness? There are two ways for answering this question. First, although they were allowed to do their jobs, they gave more priority to their personal and private jobs than Muslims' common jobs. And this was not free from a kind of leaving the better. And therefore, they needed forgiveness. Like asking forgiveness for a disapproved action. And moreover, this matter shows that Muslims must not ask permission as much as possible, and they must be benevolent. They must forfeit their personal matters, because after taking permission, their action is abandonment of what is primary. Lest trivial matters are considered as excuses of leaving important jobs and works. The other matter, however, is that they deserve Allah's favor because of their politeness towards their leader. And the Prophet ﷺ asks for Allah's forgiveness as thanking them. على مر الزمان
تألقا وأضاء للدنيا طريقا. We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
In this
word.
Series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom.
So, dear listeners, as we said, these two answers are not inconsistent, because why does the Prophet have to ask for forgiveness of these people? In the beginning part of this episode, we said that there are two possible answers. First is that although they were allowed, they somehow prioritized their personal matters over the Muslim's common job, and this is what requires forgiveness. And another answer is that since they were polite, even in leaving the better, and they tried to ask for the Prophet's permission, they need forgiveness of the Almighty Allah. They need Allah's favor because they showed their politeness towards their leader, and Prophet ﷺ is asking for forgiveness as thanking them. And these two answers are not inconsistent. Both of them may be the purpose of the verse. Anyway, these are two important Islamic disciplinary commands, and they are not limited to the Prophet ﷺ and his companions. We will continue our discussions over this 62nd verse in the next episode. Thank you for staying with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets this life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
Things always worked for me. Worry ends when faith begins.
Tonight on Exposé, legal proceedings at the International Court of Justice expose Western media bias and Israeli entity propaganda. Social media posts mocking the court for stating it cannot decide yet whether the Israeli occupation's actions in Gaza amount to genocide. By contrast, TV reports, articles, and posts celebrating ICJ ruling on Gaza genocide as a historic victory for the Palestinians that Zionist Israel vows to defy. Welcome to Exposé, the show that leaves no stone unturned. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Exposé. Now, the 17-judge panel at the International Court of Justice in The Hague issued a series of rulings about the Israeli occupation's conduct during its war against Gaza that constitute a failure to order a halt to the Israeli entity military aggression in Gaza. Now, media coverage of the ICJ hearings and initial verdict varied between optimistic, describing the proceedings as a victory for Palestine, which had inspired hope of accountability for the Israeli entity, and disappointed, describing some proceedings as stopping short of ordering a ceasefire as requested by South Africa, which brought the case. Let us begin our exposition with Fuad Itaim to showcase broadcast media productions covering this historic court order with Fake News Exposé. Now, on Friday, January 26, the world's eyes were on The Hague as the International Court of Justice, ICJ, granted some of the orders South Africa requested against the Israeli regime, but most notably declined to order the Israeli entity to immediately suspend its military operations in Gaza. Fuad, what do you have for us on this matter?
Okay. Thank you for having me, Marwa. So there have been a lot of reactions throughout the media to the ICJ's order, or partial order in this case. So let's start with the Israeli narrative. We're going to play an MSNBC interview with the Israeli Consulate General in New York, Alon Pinkas, who claims in this interview that there was no evidence provided by South Africa at the ICJ for genocidal intent.
It's like this, like a yellow card in soccer. It was a stern warning. And, you know, there are two ways of looking at it, or two takeaways. The first is the court said that, well, the court refrained from asking Israel to cease fire and to immediately halt any military operations. Had it chose to do so, it would have vindicated the argument that there could be a genocide, or that conditions for a genocide, for some form of genocide, exist. The court did not do that. On the other hand, as Matt Bradley, your correspondent, accurately put it, the court did issue provisional orders for Israel, all of which amount to a suspicion that those conditions for genocide could be met. Now, this is not genocide from a legal point of view, because you need to prove intent. And intent is a very difficult thing to prove, and I'm pretty satisfied that there's absolutely no intent on Israel's side. However, if you look at the humanitarian aid and the medical aid that is stipulated in the ruling, you see that even though it's not mentioned specifically, Jose, the court is essentially saying there should be a ceasefire. Now, tie this now to the possibility of a hostage deal that is being discussed, deliberated, or negotiated, mediated by Qatar and indirectly by the U.S., and that also includes an extended ceasefire. So take those two together, we're looking at the possibility of a ceasefire. In and of itself, the decision was less than what Israel feared, but it's a major, major slap on the wrist.
Yeah, and Ambassador, you signed a letter along with 40 other former Israeli officials who are now calling on Prime Minister Netanyahu to resign. What do you think needs to happen? What needs to change?
But look, to be honest, Jose, he should have resigned on October 7th, and then on November 7th, and then December 7th, and then January 7th. And he's probably going to get to February 7th without resigning. So this letter is more an expression of will and wishful thinking rather than a prescription or a plan of action. He needs to resign. Now, if he doesn't resign, resignation is nothing that I expect him to do. What he needs to do, what the political system needs to do, is to call for an election. Obviously, there is a heightened level of frustration with him in the U.S. and the Biden administration. Obviously, he has not cooperated on American visions of the post-war Gaza. And obviously, he's not a partner in Americanized what's called a reconfigured Middle East. So the pressure, the domestic pressure and the international pressure, particularly that coming from the U.S., will, I think, in the next 2-3 months force him into calling for an early election.
Well, so the consulate general in New York, his name is Alon Pincus, he's saying that the ICJ did not have evidence of intent of a genocide, hence why it did not call it a genocide. Doesn't he have a point in that?
Well, no, he doesn't, and it doesn't really make sense. It's a contradiction of what happened, essentially, because throughout the proceedings, we saw South Africa provide countless instances of evidence, numerous examples of Israeli soldiers filming themselves calling for resettling Gaza, reconquering Gaza. We saw official statements by official people in the government, including the Prime Minister himself, like Netanyahu, for example, Netanyahu's Amalek statement, which was an open call to wipe out women and children. We saw politicians, we saw officials making calls for forced displacement, making calls for ethnic cleansing, reforcing the population of Gaza into Egypt. It was all displayed very clearly, so it doesn't make sense for him to say there was no evidence of intent.
What about the reactions to the court ruling? What do you have on that?
Okay, so next we're going to show a Palestinian official, Ammar Hjazi. He's the Palestinian Assistant Minister for Multilateral Affairs. And from outside The Hague, Hjazi tells us that the ruling is a win for the Palestinians, and we can see it in the CBC video report. But when they cut to interviews from inside Gaza, we see a different sentiment, one of disappointment.
Acts of genocide.
The court further considers that Israel must ensure, with immediate effect, that its military forces do not commit any of the aforementioned acts.
Outside, Palestinian officials seem to interpret that as a win.
This is a good day for humanity. This ruling is in favor of international system based on law and against exceptionalism and double standards.
In Gaza, though, where health officials say 26,000 are now dead and some 250 people are killed every day, there was disappointment. Immediately, there should have been a ceasefire, Ayad Saeed told a videographer working for CBC News. And then they can start investigating and see what's really happening here. Everyone is expecting that Israel won't follow through with this ruling, said Omar al-Saka. Since when has Israel followed through with any ruling from the UN?
It's outrageous.
Israeli officials lashed out over the fact the genocide accusation still hangs over the country.
today the UN has become one of the weapons in the arsenal of modern-day Nazis against us.
A statement from Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu didn't specify whether Israel intends to follow the court's orders.
Israel's commitment to international law is unwavering. Equally unwavering is our sacred commitment to continue to defend our country and defend our people.
In Jerusalem, where support for the war remains strong, some felt this ruling won't change much.
And there's genocide going all around the world that everybody's ignoring. The international community is only focusing on Israel, and Israel is the only country that's not committing genocide. They're protecting themselves.
On the political level, let's say it was a tie. On the moral level, we lost.
Alon Liel is a former Israeli ambassador to South Africa.
Look at our television. I'm sure tomorrow people will not speak about it anymore. It will be a tendency to shelve it somewhere and forget about it. But they said, for instance, that they are waiting for a report in a month. Let's see if the court convenes in a month.
What do you get from these two contradicting positions or stances here, Fuad?
Okay, so this ICJ ruling was undoubtedly a great moral victory for the Palestinians. Mm-hmm. It was extremely symbolic. This was the first time Israel's been taken to court, essentially. Mm-hmm. It's the first time it's been brought to answer for its crimes. And so Ammar Hijazi is correct. This is a big win for the Palestinians, in a sense. But we have to understand the cynicism from the Palestinian people living in Gaza. We have to understand how they're feeling. Mm-hmm. The disappointment is expected. We have to understand that because the ICJ doesn't have any enforcement power. Mm-hmm. There's nothing really it can do. It wasn't able to call for a ceasefire. And even if it had, whatever the outcome of this case, it's going to have to go through the UN Security Council. Mm-hmm. And we know that the United States is most probably going to use its veto power to protect Israel, as it has throughout this war and as it has throughout history. Mm-hmm. So the cynicism from Palestinians inside Gaza is completely understandable.
Mm, I get that. I see that. Thank you very much, Fuad, from the Cradle, writer at the Cradle, and our expert for TV broadcast, for your analysis. Now, ladies and gents, let us move to mainstream media and the digital side. Now, while the ICJ's decision did not answer the question of whether the Israeli occupation is committing genocide, the court held that at least some of the acts and omissions alleged by South Africa to have been committed by the Israeli entity in Gaza appear to be capable of falling within the provisions of the convention. This allows the case to proceed to a decision on the merits. It also puts other states, namely those offering support to the Israeli occupation, on notice. Julia, thank you for being with us. Julia Qasem, what do you think that means, putting those states who help Zionist Israel on notice?
So human rights organizations have already launched domestic legal proceedings against U.S. officials and U.K. officials over their aid to Israel while they commit this genocide, Marwa. Mm-hmm. So while distinctly, you know, different from the ICJ case, they're still rooted in the same law, essentially. Mm-hmm. So the former is based on the Genocide Convention as implemented by U.S. law, and the latter is based on the strategic licensing criteria, which prohibits the export of weapons where there is a clear risk they might be used in violations of international law. Mm-hmm. So should the ICJ determine that Zionist Israel is committing genocide, obvious as clear day, so the states that have added it and signed off to it could also face cases before the ICJ for their participation in this genocide. And that's the major symbolic legal victory of mm-hmm. this ruling, essentially.
Okay. What did the mainstream media write about that?
Yeah, so meanwhile, the first response by the Biden administration immediately after the ICJ ruling, as reported by the U.S. publication The Hill, was, according to White House National Security spokesman John Kirby, consistent with many of the U.S.'s positions and much of the approach it has taken with Israel, in
but
his words.
How is that consistent with the U.S. approach? What does he mean by saying that?
So that's actually the issue, Marwa. It's not. So the Biden administration has earlier rebuffed efforts, notably at the UN Security Council, to impose action on the U.S. occupation. On the Israeli occupation, sorry.
So it does not really, so what the court ruled does not really go with the approach of the U.S. towards Zionist Israel.
Yeah, so the U.S. at least twice has used its veto power to reject resolutions that would call for a humanitarian ceasefire. And of course, the ICJ, as principal judicial organ of the UN, mm-hmm. is going to fall under the same limitations as an institution unable to make any tangible enforcement to punish Israel, while, as you can see, the law is inconsistent with how the U.S. is really carrying things out. And then also, as you can see, they moved on with their excuse to defund the West, basically formed this gang-like coalition to move to defund UNRWA, which is something they've been doing in the works for years in order to basically extrajudicially remove the right of return for Palestinians.
And you think that that will be the case even if the ICJ ruling will say that Zionist Israel committed a genocide in Gaza?
Yeah, so unfortunately, of course, the U.S. and the West are going to continue to behave roguely, especially in terms of these institutional bodies, which mm-hmm. we know their limitations on the ground or in terms of enforcement. I mean, just listen to what John Kirby was saying, that the number of civilian victims is zero.
Wow.
This completely out of touchness where the U.S. and the West continue to justify their complicity and completely sign off on this genocide with this kind of rhetoric. So what he was saying is that the U.S. has not seen indications that the Israeli forces are getting up out of the rack every day, putting their boots on the floor, and saying that the whole effort is to exterminate the Palestinian people. Mm-hmm. He just adamantly denied that and said, no, they're only trying to eliminate the threat that Hamas poses. Well,
apparently now 60-year-olds, 4-year-olds, and even newborn babies are Hamas and not Palestinian civilians. It is a bit sad. But thank you for that, Julia, for your presentation, for what mainstream media is saying. That's a wrap for the segment. Now, ladies and gents, we move on to the social media expose. Social media has been pulsating after the International Court of Justice, ICJ, announced its interim ruling in the case filed by South Africa against the Israeli regime over the Gaza genocide. Now, Sima, thank you for being with us to tell us more about this. But what was the latest buzz on social media concerning this issue?
It's been crazy, Marwa. There have been a lot of mixed reactions. A lot of users have expressed disappointment that the ICJ didn't call for a ceasefire, or rather a cessation of aggression. Mm-hmm. And others slammed the level of misinformation peddled by Zionist media. Mm-hmm. So starting with this first tweet by Palestinian journalist based in London, Ahmad Al-Nau, who has lost 23 members of his direct family in the latest aggression on Gaza, mm-hmm. said in disappointment, ICJ to Israel. Kill the Palestinians, but slowly. You still have another month. No ceasefire. Feed the Palestinians before you kill them.
Wow.
So
that's basically what the Palestinians, especially inside of Gaza, are feeling the moment concerning this. Some might say a historic move for Palestine, but at the same time, who am I to say if it's historic or not, positive or not? It's for the people of Gaza to say.
Many people have interpreted it that way. So. Yeah. We have another post by Palestinian writer and senior policy analyst for Al Shabaka, mm-hmm. Dr. Yara Hawari, posted in disappointment as well. How can the ICJ ask the Israeli regime to prevent acts of genocide and not call for a ceasefire?
I think that's a legitimate question, Sima, don't you think?
Especially since none of the measures that have been put forth can come into any kind of effect if there's no cessation of aggression.
Definitely.
So,
mm-hmm. Well, the next tweet.
Edward Snowden went further than just disappointment. He accused the U.S. and EU of being accessories to the crime, mm-hmm. saying, the reason the ICJ didn't order an Israeli ceasefire in the Palestinian genocide case is not for lack of evidence, in my opinion, but for fear they could not yet enforce the ruling. For the ICJ to function, the U.S. and EU must first stop serving as an accessory to the crime.
Well, he has a point there, especially that the ICJ court ruling does say that it puts on notice those states that are helping Zionist 100%. Israel. So that's pretty much a fact there. It shows a lot of how the Westerners, especially not only the Arabs or Muslims who were a bit disappointed with the ruling of the ICJ, how also Westerners who have been looking clearly and with a zoom in view towards what's going on in Gaza in such dismay at this ruling by the ICJ. Thank you very much for giving us the latest on social media reaction, especially on X, Twitter, Sima. Now,
always
ladies and gents, stay with us because we will move on to Figures Expose. Now, more than one in three Americans believe the Israeli regime is committing genocide against Palestinians, as a poll published recently. According to the Economist YouGov poll, roughly equal numbers of adults believe the Israeli occupation's military campaign against Palestinians, which is estimated to have killed more than 25,000 people since October 7, amounts to genocide, where 35% say it is a genocide, 36% say it is not, with 29% undecided. Now, the polling, which took place between January 21 and 23, showed that almost half of those surveyed, aged 18 to 29, 49% of them say that the Israeli regime is committing genocide, with 24% disagreeing and 27% uncertain. Now, the figures are broadly similar for registered Democrats, who believe that 49% to 21% in the genocide characterization, while just 30% are undecided. Now, Republicans are far more supportive of the Israeli regime's actions, with 57% of respondents saying that there is no genocide, only 18% saying there is, and exactly one quarter still unsure. Now, let us end off with the most notable voices from TikTok following the International Court of Justice verdict from 2 weeks ago. Now, TikTok users warned against downplaying the significance of the International Court of Justice ICJ ruling regarding South Africa's genocide case against the Israeli regime. We have Blair from Canada with username Madame Budgie Smuggler emphasized the importance of acknowledging its implications, saying the Israeli occupation will try to dismiss the ruling as insignificant despite the court finding plausible evidence for genocide. Here's Blair's exposé as portrayed on the Middle East Monitor.
Please stop spreading this message. It's so dangerous. You are playing into Israel's hands by spreading a message that the ICJ ruling doesn't mean anything. It does. It's so important. The fact that the ICJ ruled any provisional measures means that they found that there is a plausible case of genocide against Israel. Israel's next move is going to be to say that this ruling doesn't matter and to ignore it. Instead of agreeing with them, we all need to be stressing that this is legally binding, that every country in the world has an obligation to stop Israel from continuing to commit this genocide that the ICJ found was plausible.
Now, besides Blair, there's also Jeff ML with username Tito Senpei was another voice on TikTok who explained that even if the Israeli regime is to be found guilty by the ICJ, there is an important distinction that needs to be identified, and that is that the ICJ has no mechanism to enforce their ruling against the Israeli regime. Here's Jeff's exposé.
While this is a significant first step, there's an important distinction that we need to understand is that the ICJ is different from the ICC. One being is that they are a civil court between two countries, whereas the ICC is actually a criminal court with the ability to prosecute and the ability to send out arrest warrants. So what this means that even if Israel is found guilty of genocide in the ICJ, they could effectively ignore the ruling, especially if their allies such as the US Empire and the EU also disagrees with the ruling. But one thing good that could come out of it is if they are found guilty in the ICJ, this means the ICC could actually step in and begin their own investigation, which could lead to their own trial, which could then lead to effective prosecution and arrest warrants.
Ladies and gents, with that, we conclude our exposé for tonight. Stay tuned for more eye-opening investigations on exposé. The truth is just a revelation away.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key, with Sheikh Rouhani on RIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Thumma salatu wassalamu ala Sayyidina Muhammadin wa alihi al-Tahirin. Dear and respected brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. In this program of The Key, we are going to, inshallah, answer some of the very important religious questions regarding the a principle of imamate in which we Muslims believe in. One of the very significant questions regarding